Welcome to the School of Serenity. Today we're going to be talking about healing the feminine wound and mental health with women's empowerment. Thank you for joining us. We are being broadcast on 4MTV, and 4MTV is a TV initiative that focuses on mental health. The 4Ms stand for mental health, migration, multi-language and culture, and mindfulness. And we are practicing mindfulness across borders. I am your host, Kara Keem. Lovely to see you today. And I am a psychotherapist, a Reiki master, and an author. I have a private practice blending therapy and energy work, and I work with women to help them access their empowerment through the voice of their intuition. I've also written a book called Discovering My Wings, and it's about my personal journey through my own hero's journey and empowerment. And I have that right here in hopes that my journey inspires yours. And today we have a very special guest. I cannot think of somebody better to be on the show when talking about mindfulness beyond borders. We're going to welcome Sadaf Latfalyan. She is a clinical psychologist, and she wrote her dissertation on mindfulness. And not only that, but she has been living across borders for her whole life. She is originally from Iran. She spent some of her childhood in Sweden. She then moved to Canada for college, completed her PhD in the United States, and is now living in Portugal. So when I think about an expert in mindfulness and mindfulness beyond borders, you are such a guest to have on this show. Thank you for being here. And you as well work with women and helping them access their intuition and finding their power. So can you share with us a little bit about your journey to mindfulness and working to help empower women?
Yes, thank you for having me. This is wild. Sitting here with you, I feel excited. It's a bit surreal. I'm sort of grounding into the space, and I'm so grateful. Mindfulness. You know, I had your questions beforehand, and I felt like, do I want to prepare for this, or do I want to just sort of go for it? And I think I'll do a mix of both. So the thing that came to me when I read your question was high school, when I was dealing with a lot. I think I was just suffering really with a lot of mental health stuff and immigration and losses and, you know, family dynamics and all of that. And I really couldn't come to see a way out in a way. And I came across this Buddhist temple in Stockholm, Sweden, and I grabbed a book and I started reading the principles, and I met someone, a mentor of mine there, and he told me, he gave me a formula that I think sort of changed my path. And the formula was pain times resistance equals suffering. And he was normalizing for me that as human beings, we're all going to experience pain. It's inherent that at some point that's going to happen. And we're made for this. We can tolerate pain. We're made to cope with pain. We've done it for so many centuries, and that I can too. Yes. But really, when suffering happens, when we're so resistant to not wanting to feel grief, not wanting to feel something that's actually a really natural part of the human experience, which is just feel the pain, feel sadness, feel anger, feel yes. your sacred rage, all of that, and don't resist it. Because I didn't want to see it. I was like this, you know.
Yes.
And so it was, the formula hit home in a way. But I think high school and college, and even part of grad school, mindfulness was a bit intellectual for me. It was very theoretical, intellectual. I understood the formula. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. But if I go towards something like this, I'm not really leaning into it. Like, I get that, but I couldn't really feel it. You know, I wasn't in a place of feeling it. And I think with practice and just specializing in mindfulness and my PhD, all of that, now I feel like I have a visceral, it's somewhere, it's like a visceral reference where I know what the sensation of mindfulness now is with my body, if I remember. I don't always remember, but when I remember, I can feel it in my body and I can always go to that sensation and I can remember that I'm capable. You know, I'm capable of tolerating pain and my resistance. I can sort of let go. I can let go. And so that's sort of my own personal journey, and I saw the value with it a lot. And with women, you know, I think growing up with in Iran, and later I understood this was actually everywhere in the world, but particularly in Iran, my exposure was that so many, I mean, the oppression, you know, and the suppression and the oppression and the misogyny and the toxic masculinity and the violence and all of that, the unfairness of it all, you know, just was a lot of exposure to how much women were deprived of their feminine essence, and they really couldn't, they literally didn't have access to possibilities. So, you know, there was a lot of pain. There was a lot of pain there. And so women, working with women has a particular, it's really feels important to me. And a lot of my clients in my private practice are women. And I just sort of have always been on the women's right as an activist and, you know, working for women's rights. And you just creating containers for women so that they can speak and they can explore and they can feel safe in really going there, because so often in the outside world, it really isn't that safe, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you. And what's been so special and profound for me, I'm going to share with the audience that Sadaf is one of my dearest friends and is actually godmother to my daughter and was there with her birth. And I met you before you even embarked on this journey of getting your PhD. I mean, you were really deciding the direction you were going in. And it feels very profound for me that we both ended up with private practices, you know, different degrees and different ways of working, but focusing on women and having a passion about helping women tap into their sacred feminine. And so that's been just such a powerful and beautiful journey to see our career paths and different fields sort of align. And so we were talking earlier about the sacred feminine and what that means and how the audience can understand that. And I did some work with some shamans in Santa Fe, and how it was explained to me is that we all have within us the divine feminine and the divine masculine, and we are a blend of both. And so culturally, a lot of these parts of ourselves have been repressed. And what I love hearing is that, you know, you experienced that in different places and in the US as well as where you grew up. So it really does seem to be this global wound that's much deeper than just the individual wounding that we feel as individuals. And so how it was explained is the feminine is the void of all possibility. The feminine is pure potential. And then the masculine really brings the feminine to form. It's what gives the feminine life. And so, if we're too much in the feminine, there's no action. But if we're too much in the masculine, we burn out. And I just don't think that we've been taught that we have these parts of ourselves and that we do have this divinity within us, you know, the divine masculine, even as women, and the divine feminine. And so, it's kind of like we've been repressing our masculine, and culturally, our feminine has been repressed. For so long. And so I'm just curious about bringing mindfulness to these individual wounds, but also these larger global wounds that seem to be happening around the world.
I really love, I really love your, I'm grateful that you've exposed me to that description of the feminine, because I, and the masculine, because I feel like I think we're in this culture right now where we're talking about it a lot, and sometimes it can get a bit noisy. Sometimes it's like, I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. What energies are we talking about? And I
Yes.
just particularly love your description of it, and just the idea of possibilities versus burnout, right? And
Yes.
I think I've been both on the extreme of both sides and also in the middle too, where it's balanced, and how magical that space is, where it's balanced. You
Yes.
know, it's precious. It's really precious. But you know, related to the feminine wounding, right, of like the oppression of the feminine in that sense, is that what I've noticed is that so much of our inner voice is actually the outer voice. You know, when I see clients, I consistently hear that their inner voice has for too long been the outer voice that they have taken on, and they've internalized, they've absorbed it, and they've internalized it, and then they get lost, and then you don't know what your essence is anymore. What is the world of possibilities if your entire compass, that's your inner compass, is actually made up of the outer standards, voices, messages, you know,
Yes.
rules, norms. So of course, in that space, it's very confusing, and you feel indecisive, you feel lost, you feel isolated, you don't know who you are, you don't know what you want, you don't know what your powers are. And
Yes.
it's an anxious space to be. It's ungrounded. You know, feminine is very grounded because it knows the inner voice is clear, you know. So if you've absorbed the outer voice, which sadly is so dominated by patriarchy globally,
Yes.
then the standards and the norms you're holding for yourself, you know, are going to be dictated by those norms,
Yes.
you know, by those patriarchal norms. And so, of course, then we can't hear what our essence is. So part of therapy, you know, is sort of getting first being aware of the junk, you know, how much of the outer noise is junk, essentially, how much of it is not serving you. It's based on principles that are really not serving anyone, I don't think, anyone, man, woman, child, the elderly, it doesn't matter, you know. And how do we declutter, essentially? How do we declutter so that the inner voice becomes a bit more clear, a bit more present, and then we can just listen and very gradually put the pieces together to understand what is our essence, and who are we? And so then what are the possibilities of what I want to create in this world, and before I die, as my legacy, as my, you know, so I think I'm forgetting even the question, but sort of like doing the work in this collective mess
Yes,
of
yes.
like the patriarchy, you know, being the massive outer voice and all the noise, and how do you then tune into your inner essence, you know? And part of
Yes.
that is we need containers. We need safe containers to declutter and tell each other and reflect to each other that outer voice is not yours. You know, that standard is not yours. That norm is not serving us. That narrative is limiting. You
Yes.
know, that belief is critical. You know, all these lifestyles are punishing. Just let's pause. And then I think we can create some space to then listen to what would feel good, then what is pleasure, and what's joy, and what's clarity, and what's confidence, and what's love, and where to go, and you know.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know if that makes
Yes.
sense.
Absolutely. And I think that we forget joy and pleasure. I think that they're forgotten arts that we leave to children, you know. And so, when you and I were talking about doing the show, we kept saying, let's just make it fun. You know, let's just make it fun. Let's just, it's all made up. Let's create it as we go. And we forget to have fun with life. And especially when there are these deep wounds that we're really struggling, it's almost like our inner child is so scared and so turned off that it's forgetting to just allow this adult to have fun and sink back into joy and pleasure again.
Yeah. And, you know, I wonder for you as a mother, right? And of course, your daughter happens to be my godmother, my goddaughter. So I'm protective and like all these things. But like, I wonder as a mother, having the awareness that you do now, that the inner voice needs to be compassionate. The inner voice needs to be playful. Yeah. You know, it needs to be joyful. And how do we just sort of reflect that and facilitate that? Like, I wonder as a mother, what is that like for you in sort of daily interactions with Fair? And
well, know. I'll say I feel like every day she's my teacher, because she is always saying, "Mama, you're too serious. Just lighten up." And she's right.
It's true. She's right. It's true.
I'm like, I've got to see this client and get this done and get that. Who has time to have fun, you know? And so she's this constant reminder of having fun. But I think that's, you know, why you and I and our friends take the trips that we do and go to yoga festivals and wherever it is that we go. We went to Tahoe together a few summers ago. It's to remind ourselves to have fun in this healing process. You know, we all have these wounds, and there are these global wounds and individual wounds, and just to create space for enjoying ourselves in the process.
Yeah.
Creating opportunities.
I miss those. It feels like a lifetime ago.
It does. Yes. Life happens. Yeah. So I wonder, you know, how can we just create fun for ourselves in small ways in everyday life? I mean, do you have any thoughts on that or ideas?
Yeah, they're not miraculous, I don't think. Sometimes I feel like clients are like, "Oh, so then can you show me the miraculous way of getting there?" And I don't know if I have anything like that, but I think rituals and ceremonies that are daily and realistic as a practice, so it becomes a muscle, you know, those are important to me. So a morning ritual that's joyful. I don't know if that looks like just breathing, or if it means spending a long time with your cup of tea. Or for me, it's, I have these, you know, I'm obsessed with this organization called the School of Life that's based in London.
Tell us about it, because I know you
just as a disclaimer, like I don't get paid or anything for any of this, but I love their stuff. I've been exploring their stuff, but they've got these decks of cards with different prompts. And I have those, and I go through the prompts, at least like 15 to 20 prompts every morning. And I love just either writing gibberish, from anything from gibberish to profound things in my notepad. And then if I can integrate it with a little bit of just a moment of a dance move and singing, and, you know, just so I don't take my day to come too seriously. And I remember that I can just do things like the things I love, like create art, you know, write something, do a little bit of a dance move, sing the way I want to. I think it's in those little moments like that every day. It's not going to be, and it's great when we go to those events like yoga, you know, those are great reminders, and they're intense and they're so transformative and profound. But then keeping it up with like 5 minutes a day of just the reminder is so powerful.
Yes, absolutely. And something that just came to mind as you were talking is five rhythms. Because when I think of you, I think of dancing. Yeah. I mean, you are
dance is like, my medicine.
So embodied when you dance. And so, you know, if we can find opportunities to dance through organizations, five rhythms just popped in my head too.
Yeah. You know, my partner, just bringing him, including him in this discussion a little bit, but he names it, he labels it as going downstairs and versus like really being, "Oh, I've got the client, I've got, you know," plant the executive functioning is so on. And then if you mix it with your emotions, like the head space is so on, you know, and he calls that the upstairs. And so sometimes there's a reminder of like, can we like take the stairs down to the heart space? You know, can we go downstairs
Yes.
for a moment?
Yes.
Just like tune in and just go down here a little bit. And I think with dance, I don't have time to think. Like I'm not
Yes.
thinking, I'm not planning my next move. Not it's I'm just downstairs. And I think for anyone that can look like whatever gets you to move the energy a bit down so you're not planning anything
Yes.
is helpful. It's just present moment awareness.
Yes,
Yeah.
absolutely. I love that.
Yeah.
Yes,
Yeah.
yeah. And I also want to take a moment to talk about plant medicine with you because you've really taken this journey into facilitating and assisting with plant medicine. And you've worked through Johns Hopkins, and I think you did some work
Yeah.
at UCLA as well. And I know that you and I have had some opportunities to do some plant medicine journeys together. And what comes up for me over and over again when I do these ceremonies is body image. And that seems to be a really intense wound for women individually, but also it's reinforced when you were saying the outer voice, it's so reinforced collectively. And you've lived in so many countries, and I imagine that you're seeing it across cultures. Is that true? That.
Definitely. I feel like it's such a global thing now. And I definitely see it everywhere. I think it takes different forms where you go, depending on where you go. In some parts of the world, you have to be, I don't know, tall and skinny and whatever. In some parts of the world, you know, you have to have really big, you got to be very curvy. So anything, if you're not any of that, you're just not gonna fit into that outer narrative, and you're always gonna be wondering then what is this? You know, what is this? What does this mean then, this thing that I'm inhabiting? I see it everywhere, really now more than ever. I think when I started, when I was studying psychology in undergrad, it was interesting because it shows you how it's actually getting a bit worse. Because in undergrad, I remember the research and the data was showing that it hadn't gotten to countries, for example, like India, I remember, where it was actually very value to eat. It's like a valued thing to be able to eat. And that's, we're not going to get into why. I don't, you know, I don't, it's not my expertise, but I remember it hadn't really caught on that much. There were still parts of the world that were protected. And that's changed massively where it feels like it's just, there's no protection anymore, across cultures and across, continents and so on. With plant medicine, I think that would be lovely to actually start. I wonder if Hopkins could start. Maybe they even have some with plant medicine and exploring it with disordered eating or body image issues. Like you and I have maybe had moments. It's like when you understand, I think two things happen, and this is my experience, but with plant medicine, one is that everything that's trivial becomes pretty kind of not important. It's sort of like you're so tuned into the most profound and important lessons in life that the rest kind of is noisy and distracting. And if you get stuck in that distraction and the noise, that's what becomes a bad trip, you know? So it's sort of like come back to to how profound life really is, and just being alive and existing, and these organs being so intelligent, and our cells being so intelligent and doing their thing, and just trusting sort of that process and understanding that I think the only legitimate thing we could fear in life, or we could criticize, or be a bit like, oh, I don't like that, is the fact that we're gonna die. You know, we are mortal, and that's going to happen. So it's sort of like that's hard, but beyond that, it all feels very critical and made up. Speaking of, it's all made up. It's like the rest is like we're just creating all these things and nuances and stories and None of the plant medicine world, not much of that sticks, and the narrative starts sort of losing significance and texture, and you know.
Yes, absolutely. I have a whole chapter in my book about going down to Peru and doing plant medicine with shamans and really embarking on this journey to even having a moment of loving my body. And at that time in my life, one moment of love felt huge, huge. And so I had never accessed that space before. I had never stepped into a space where I could say, wow, I love my body. And I did in that moment with plant medicine. And I've done it with you where I've accessed it more. And now I can honestly say that I wake up more days than not and say, wow, I love my body. Now, maybe it's 50-50, but I mean, when I started this journey, and especially with body image and plant medicine, it was 0% of the time. I mean, I was in deep self-loathing of the way I looked and the way I was in the world. And that really is this deep wound personally, but also collectively. I mean, that was very much messages given to me collectively. Yeah. And so I've just noticed how plant medicine has been very profound for my healing with body image. Mm-hmm. And I know you're involved in plant medicine, and it really reframes the way we view ourselves and what's important in life.
Yeah. And you know, something, and imagery is coming to my mind, because I think the reference I have that's so strong for me is I had a moment where I was looking at my legs, like I was bending down in a yoga pose one time, and I was looking at my legs, which I think were a source of criticism for me growing up. A long time, there were a lot of comment, you know, there was a lot of commentary on like legs being a certain way, da, 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 which is, you know. And I remember looking down in this posture and tuning into the intelligence of my body and understanding that it was so sophisticated how I was in this pose. How I was even, and it was like a, probably a downward dog. I mean, it wasn't like a, yogi. So it was nothing, but I remember the gratitude of, wow, my body's so sophisticated that I can be in this position and stare at my legs. And I just loved my legs. And it became, it helped with the present experience of sensation versus the intellectual experience of an image, of a body image. You know, if you tune into the sensations of, like, you know, I have clients that are particular about their specific body parts with body image issues, right? Like if I do this and my arms go like that, I can't, and I start binging or something, you know. And but even just raising the arm, instead of like fixating on how does this look when I do this, but just experiencing the sensation of like, wow, I'm like raising my arm and slowing down, and I can do this, and I can, you know, just taking attention from some visual imagery standard thing we've made up to what is the sensation of like moving my arm? What does that feel like in this moment? You know? So just moments like that, I feel, even with mindfulness or the plant medicines, like it's, they help you slow down enough and bring attention back to the sensation versus, you know, going upstairs and like getting up here and doing the checking and, you know, all of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that just reminded me when I was in Peru and I was working with a shaman, I was having a moment of intense anxiety. Everyone was out dancing on rainbows and enjoying the waterfalls. And I was just like wretched. I was like, oh, what is this experience? And he said, go into your heart center. The mind won't serve you now, you know? And that's really what plant medicine can help you do if you allow it. It can take you downstairs, you know, and you out of the ego. And that's where so much opens up to you.
Right. And we don't sometimes, you know, I don't know if you have this experience, but we, even the idea of taking our thoughts so seriously, like taking the upstairs so seriously, is like you're saying, like your daughter, you know, Fair says, you're so serious, you know, it's like taking this way too serious. Every thought can be as useless as we make it to be meaningful, really.
It's,
depending on how you look at it, it could be totally meaningless if you if that's your perspective, or it could be. So again, I love how we keep going back to this, the phrase of it's all made up. But it's like, it's again, it's kind of made up. It's like your belief can be not meaningful at all, or it could be super meaningful and it could be the same thought.
Yes.
So why hold it tightly, you know?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, and I am going to share this because I just, well, I didn't ask you if I could, but Cece and I met at a Burning Man camp called IMU, which stands for it's all made up. And so that's where I really learned there is no reality. There is no truth. We're making it up as we go along. And so when Farah tells me I'm being so serious, I'm like, you know, I can be really fun. And she's like, when? And I'm like, no, no, I have friends at IMU who think I'm really, really fun. Like, I promise I have a funny side, you know.
That's a chapter in your book too, that even, I think there's a chapter where you're like, the moment where somebody, I won't say their name, but they reflected back to you that like, you're okay and you're fully accepted in your and you're fun, like you're just you are actually fun, you know.
yes We have all these different parts of ourselves, and if we can remember the side of us that feels embodied or feels fun and gets to make it up differently than staying in these rigid stories that we've really been stuck in and that have really been projected onto us. And I do talk about that in my book. Is that's why Burning Man was profound to me, because no stories were being projected onto me. It's like cultural context was gone. And we landed at IMU, where we got to make it up.
We did.
You know.
We totally made it up.
We made it up.
That's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. So
beautiful.
I love that thought. I hope Charles is watching this. Like,
I hope so too. we really do get to make it up. And if we're going to make it up, then what story do you want to tell? You know, and this is, I think, what also partly why plant medicine could be helpful with that, because it's like, if you get to make it up, would you not rather choose a profound narrative? And one that you're going to be on your deathbed one day, and as a legacy, you'll look back and you'll actually remember that profound narrative.
Yes.
And why, you know, why not ground that in compassion and kindness and love and all those things that actually, literally, we have data, so much data that says every person on their deathbed eventually thinks about, did I experience enough love and kindness and compassion?
Yes. Yes.
And was the dominating narrative of my life grounded in those values, you know, or was I dissociated? Was I constantly hypervigilant and, you know, which our society and systems, they don't really, they don't support and protect. That's why it's hard, you know, they don't really support that. So it's tricky, but I hope that there's power in communities like the ones we have to just keep creating containers where there's a reminder that like, no, hey, like you're gonna, one day it's gonna happen and you want kindness, you know, and you want compassion and you want a good story.
Yes, and as you're talking, that leads me perfectly into the next thing that I wanted to discuss with you, because when I think about kindness and compassion, I also think about towards self, you know, really like the self-love, the self-compassion. And so I wanted to talk to you about the importance of boundaries, because boundaries really are an act of self-love. I mean, boundaries are showing kindness towards yourself by not allowing yourself to be violated. And so I want to talk about conscious communication and boundary setting and repairing relationships, because I think if we're, you know, looking at compassion and love, boundaries are a big part of that for self-love.
I wonder if I, you know, for me, because I have, I think because of my cultural context too, I'm generalizing a little bit, but I wasn't really raised with assertive communication. And I don't think globally many of us are. We're not, I don't think we're like globally taught, hey, own your yes. Own your no. How do you communicate the nuance then? You know, how do you respectfully say what it is that you need and what you want without disrespecting somebody else's boundaries and values? Like, how do you manage that? If I wanted some, a lot of us have to manipulate a little bit, and that's because we don't know how to. If we want and need something, or if we have a boundary, it's like we go all these ways to just be like, I need this, or this is where I want to stop. And we can't just say, this is where I want to stop. This is where. And so I wasn't raised with that. And that wasn't the culture. And I honestly don't see it anywhere. And I think it almost entirely every single client I have, or every single person in my circles and communities, really wants this and is in the thick of the learning of it. How does it work to go to a friend that with a difficult dynamic and share how you feel, in what ways your boundaries were broken, how do you kind of create safe containers essentially so that it's safe to go? Because a lot of times it just doesn't feel safe to go to someone and say, this is how I feel, this is what I need. And you don't need to meet it, but I need to voice it, because this is my inner power to be able to just say, I need this, I want this, and here's my boundary. So I'm seeing that there's a huge need in this, in the education of it, in the experience of it, in the exposure of it, in the learning of it. And I don't know what your experience is with the people around you.
Well, I did not grow up knowing how to set boundaries for myself. And so it's really uncomfortable at first. I mean, it's something that's awkward and it's not going smoothly initially. But I think that it is so intimate to be able to go to friends and say, look, this is how I'm feeling. This boundary was violated, to partners, even with children, with Fair, my daughter, I'm having these conversations now because I think, particularly in the US where I was raised, I very much had this people pleasing, you want to be nice, you want to smile, don't rock the boat, don't create waves. And so I never learned to set boundaries around what my needs were. I was so concerned that I was meeting everybody else's needs all the time that I didn't even know what my own needs really were. And so now as a parent, I'm really having these conversations. But she came in with pretty strong boundaries. I mean, that just feels
I
very
remember,
innate for her. And so, culturally, I don't think women really know how to have these conversations and empower themselves with boundaries. And so that's a lot of the work I do as a psychotherapist, is working with women to help them find their empowered voice to set these boundaries and claim their needs. I feel like our throat chakras, our voice, it just we're so, at a very young age. So I do think that I'm wondering, you've lived so many places. Do you see that across cultures?
I see it. Oh my God, yes. Like everywhere. And it's so funny because I also think it's even a struggle. There's this like new agey kind of groups and circles going on. There's a more enlightened communities going on. There are people who are masters of, for example, very complicated relationship dynamics, who are super grounded in conscious communication. And yet it's so pervasive how much we struggle with knowing how to set boundaries. I really haven't, it's not like a group or a practice is protected from that. It's not. I think we're all a bit like this. And we don't, it's really scary to go to someone and just feel like I'm safe to say how I feel in this moment, and I'm not going to be attacked, blamed, shamed, all of that. And I agree that with my, especially with my female clients, it breaks my heart, but it's also like even the baseline foundation of what are boundaries? Like we're there, we're there right now. And I think by the time FAIR I think the consent culture is getting more, is getting heat and attention. I hope that we can navigate it with care and grace. I think by the time she's our age, hopefully it's easier. But I'm like you. It takes a lot of energy for me to a bit mechanically be like, this is what I, you know. It's not easy. It's not easy at all.
I know. And it takes a lot of practice, I'm noticing. And when I begin to do it initially, it's so uncomfortable. I mean, the anxiety and stress it causes. I'm like, oh gosh, I have to set a boundary. I don't know how to do this. And then I notice the more I do it, the more comfortable it becomes. And you know, what's really striking me is how these wounds that women have been living with are really just pervasive across the globe. Like everything we've talked about, like body image and the power of our voice and conscious communication. I mean, we're seeing it in all cultures. And so while we do have these individual wounds, I just feel like this discussion over and over comes back to this big global concern. And so it really comes down to helping women find their power.
Across the globe. And, you know, based on that, because of that, because sometimes I get overwhelmed when I think in that way. I'm like, oh my God, this is a lot. And
I understand
how much can we do, you know, like, is this fast enough? Like, will I see it in my lifetime? Who's getting, you know, harmed in this moment, and we're not saving all these things.
And I
think this is why, like, the current movement towards normalizing mental health, and towards normalizing therapy and towards normalizing becoming our own therapists. I feel like I see so much of the people around me, or even not even around me, like exposure through Instagram or something, stepping into wanting to do the work, like stepping into understanding, wait, what are boundaries? There's a lot of discussions about that. What is that for me? You know, so there's a lot of, inspiration, I think, going on for people to learn to therapize themselves or to learn more about themselves. And that gives me a lot of hope, because I've never seen the movement through, you know, in self-awareness and self-introspection and therapy in the way that I'm seeing it now. It's like so energized and it's so normalized in a way, and it's getting more destigmatized, and we still have so much work to do. But what I wanted to say is that it's so cross-cultural, and that means that you will have your own pocket, right, of women to bring awareness to be the channel of, you know, sort of conveying that messaging, to bring them and invite them into safe containers to share more. And I have my little pocket. And if we can get more women to step into creating these little pockets and little containers, and little movements, I mean, you know, can you imagine? It's so local. I just keep thinking local and global, but empowering more women to sort of step into those containers and taking ownership in creating it and learning and, you know, reaching out and educating and normalizing, really normalizing for each other that we need this.
And it's happening. It is happening.
It's just happening.
Just the station, School of Serenity, for MTV, like, what an initiative to normalize mental health, and such a blessing to be involved with. And I meant to say this also in your introduction, I forgot, but you work with individuals who speak Farsi, Swedish, and English. So, I mean, your pocket's pretty broad right there. I mean, you know, you've got a large span, large scope. And so talk about mindfulness across borders. I mean, you have it even within your own private practice. And I really feel women rising. I feel this strongly. And one of my favorite books is You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay. And she said that we were moving out of the Piscean age and into the Aquarian age. And the Piscean age was really defined by looking for the answers outside of ourselves. And as we move into the Aquarian age, we understand our own power, and we understand that our healing lies within us. And so maybe one day you and I will be out of a job. That goes
You
real
know,
well.
I think I'm okay with that. We can get creative. I'm
Yeah.
okay with that. And
Yes.
but I, yeah, that's hopeful. That gives me a lot of
Yes.
hope. And I see it. And I really do see it. I mean, every person I ask around me, mostly, you know, there's at least they're wondering what is therapy? At least, like, they're like, oh, yeah, I've heard about it. It's like it's getting really, and I'm very, I'm hopeful. I'm really
Yes.
hopeful.
Yeah. It's happening. It is. It is. And I mean, our job really is to empower our clients to find the answers within themselves. And your bio says helping women access their inner wisdom, and mine says helping women access their intuition. So, you know, we empower them to know that they have the answers within themselves.
Definitely. And you know, every time, I think speaking of my work around plant medicine, I'll just mention this. You know, before I was more into sort of facilitating maybe plant medicine and ceremonies and things like that, and bringing awareness to plant medicine in general. And I'm still in that, but one thing I've realized doing this work is, again, because these cycles of patriarchy and toxic masculinity, all of this continue, there is a lot of toxicity and abuse and harm going on in those circles as well, and from the
Yeah.
facilitator's position, sadly, you know, and there's a lot of abuse of power, you know, and the thing I'm seeing is, whether you're a shaman or a clinical psychologist or a psychiatrist or a facilitator of any kind of these ceremonies, there might be a tendency to want to project your own beliefs onto somebody else. No, I know the truth. No,
Right,
the
right,
world works in this way.
right.
And that's emotional, that's an emotional manipulation, and that's a bit abusive, you know, when you try to sort of project what you know as the truth, what may be working for you, onto somebody else, and continuously normalizing that that is not a therapeutic channel,
Yes,
you know?
yes.
And the therapeutic channel is you are in the seat of power. You
Yes.
will always
Yes.
know
Yes.
better what's best for you. I
Yes.
can create safety for you to explore what that voice is, but it's not going to be mine projected onto you, you
Yes.
know.
Yes.
So you saying that brought that up for me, because so often I also see that when we're vulnerable and desperate and we're dissociated from the inner voice and we don't have clarity and we're anxious and confused and we're not in touch with our intuition and all these things, we want somebody to tell us. You know, we're
Yes,
like,
yes.
tell me something, like, tell me
Yes.
something to believe in, you know?
Exactly. Yes.
And that's
Yes.
tricky. Yeah.
Yes. Because we're
And
very
it's like,
vulnerable.
can we? We're so vulnerable and we'll believe it, you know, because if something is meaningful enough, we'll believe it. And so just pausing sometimes to say, what is mine and what feels good in this body, in this moment, with kindness and compassion and from a foundation of love, like, what is that voice for me in this moment? And nobody can tell you what that looks like. That's the power of regaining the intuition and like the feminine back, right? We get the feminine back, hopefully.
Absolutely, absolutely. And our bodies are so wise. When we go back to body image, if we can look at our bodies as wisdom keepers, you know, Bessel van der Kolk wrote, "The body keeps the score." I mean, our bodies store everything, but they're also delivering messages all the time. And when I am not listening to my intuition, I feel it in my body. Like it's a physical sensation. Do you have that? Can you relate to that?
Oh, yeah, if I slow down enough, I
If
will.
we slow
If
down,
I'm not,
yeah, it's in our body. And so our bodies are just, when I stopped looking at my body as just this physical thing that needed to appear in this way, and I looked at it as a messenger who has really important information to share with me, it's a whole new relationship with my body. My body is now my wisdom keeper, you know, versus something that needs to be physically molded. And so I think that's a big part of stepping back into our power is getting the wisdom from our bodies back.
Yeah, and this reminds me of, I don't know, I hope this is okay that I'm sharing, but I don't think I've ever experienced something more in terms of the body power, more profound than witnessing you give birth in the woods, in the middle of the woods, basically, on no medication, no tools, no gadgets, nothing really. I think the midwife was even late, like really late. We were all like, what's going on? I think, what can you tell me a little bit about what it was like in those moments, whether the practice of needing to constantly tune in, because for me it was like you are, because the pain, I can't imagine, but the pain is so profound that you have to listen to something deeper than that, right? Like the trusting you, the power that you hold in your body, trusting that you've got this, you know? So what is that like? What was
Well, I the thing I remember so clearly is you holding my hands and breathing with me and just knowing, okay, I have support here. I have support. And one of our mutual friends gave me a book called Women Are Strong, Kadi. And so I just remember reading in that book that we were born to do this. We have this innate knowing how to birth. We know how to birth, we know how to die. You know, that those are natural events in life. And just returning to that knowledge, if I got scared, if I freaked out, if I was like, what am I doing in the woods delivering a baby? You know, like, oh, my body was born to do this. I actually already know everything I'm supposed to do. It's the same as accessing your intuition. You know, you have this knowledge in you. You have this wisdom in you. Can you tune in and can you listen? And then obviously there are moments where I was just like, what in the world? But like trusting, it comes back to trusting ourselves and trusting our bodies.
And
And when we can
knowing, I think in some way, no, tell me.
I was going to say, when we can develop that relationship with our body, we're in completely different union with our bodies.
I'm not sure if I'm, that's like a very, it has to be a very intentional practice for me. And that's why I think it's important to create that space every day so you can get reminded. Because if you don't have the reminders and if you just are, you keep going and you don't pause, it's like I forget
Well,
a
I
little
do
bit, you
too.
know,
Oh
just
gosh.
like forget. And also, I think in that day, you also knew it wasn't like just entirely trusting your body and in isolation. And you also knew when to ask for support from whom and at what time and what did it look like. And there were many hands involved, you know. And that was powerful because it was like, oh, in this moment, she needs this. You know, in this moment, somebody would offer you, and you were a firm no. It was like actually a beautiful day of boundaries and communication and trusting the body and going beyond the narratives and being really downstairs and breathing and community and like the safety, you know, that you have in being able to have the people around you who can also offer what you're needing. Like all of that was, I think I'm sharing this from a place of, just as a disclaimer, I'll share this. For a moment, I felt like sometimes we tend to trust the body, but we do it in isolation. And sometimes that scares me about the culture too. It's like we don't, we need, we all need, like, trust your body and do it in a communal sort of context because we are also not, you know, we don't have superpowers either. So it's like, when do you know who to ask and what are your resources is also like so important.
Yes, and that's another part of coming back to your power, you know, accessing your intuition, learning to trust your body, and learning to speak your truth. Like, I see those as like really returning to my power. That's how I return to my power as a woman and heal the sacred feminine.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
I love your clarity. That clarity is like,
So that's my experience of my journey to healing my sacred feminine. And this has just been such a pleasure to be here with you. I just looked at the time. I thought I was supposed to be on till two. Do you have anything else to share or any points of clarity, or what else would you like to say to our guests as we sort of wrap up? And
you know, the only thing I would say is I love, like, even with this channel, which I'm so grateful for, it's like social media, and maybe beyond social media, the internet is amazing. Like, it's also horrible, but it's also amazing. You know, and now we have these platforms that can be these spaces where we can keep voicing, and I think that's expanding. And it's really empowering, or at least giving the possibility, speaking of the feminine, right? It's creating possibilities for more people to step into these positions, like how we're sitting, you know, with each other right now and talking about this. And who knows, if we reach one person, we've reached one person, you know, and if it resonates, it's amazing. So just encouraging this culture of let's keep creating these containers, online, virtually, in community, in person, in retreats, but like it really encouraging the value of co-creating these spaces with these messages. And I'm so grateful for both Ari and the channel and the fact that you invited me, and I love you, and I feel like our life just keeps unfolding,
expanding, like the feminine. We're expanding.
The feminine is just
like
expanding.
Yes.
I'm so grateful for you.
Me too. What a gift and what a blessing to have these conversations and to share the space. And I encourage all of the viewers, make it up as you go along, just like Siddhartha and I are doing. Just make it all up and continue to spread this vibration of healing the feminine. And hopefully you've gotten some tips from us today, and please feel free to leave some comments and check in with us or contact us. I'm sure we'll have some ways to communicate with us after this. And thank you for joining us. And thank you so much for being a guest here. What a blessing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.